Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank, which means it belongs to you. You get money back in the end. Better than just any old bank. Can't say better on public radio. I didn't say that. www.mecu.com. For more information, I'll go to steinershow.org, click on their banner, mecu.com. Open Society, this is the 12th class?
15th.
15th. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bailey. The 15th class at OSI. And OSI gives these 18-month fellowships to people who are working on transformative projects in Baltimore. And four of those fellows are with us this hour. We try to interview as many fellows as we can every year. We'll have a whole series of these. We are joined by Bashi Rose, who's been a guest on the show many times over the years, the last 20 years.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you. He established the Direct Response Alleviate Misdirected Aggression Program, known as DRAMA, to give African-American male high school students and incarcerated men, adults, an opportunity to use theater and film as tools to navigate conflict without resorting to violence. And he's also co-founder of the Men of Nomo Theater, which is how we first met.
Right.
Pasha Lee is with us. She founded Imagine Me Ministries, an after-school mentoring program at Friendship Preparatory Academy in Calverton. She's creating the Imagine Me Book Project. The focus is on building long-term mentoring relationships to support the academic and behavioral needs of middle school girls, often neglected. Good to see you, Pasha. Welcome.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Harold Bailey is with us. He's partnering with the Turk House Recovery Centers to provide peer-to-peer counseling, social counseling workshops, and employment preparation services for formerly incarcerated males before they transition from those facilities. He was incarcerated for 20 years. Since he was released in 2005, he's received his bachelor's and master's degree from Coppin State University. And Harold, welcome. Good to have you in the studio with us.
Thank you so much.
And Cheryl Carmona is with us. Cheryl Carmona created the Greater Greenmount Trash and Recycling Campaign, which educates residents in the community about proper waste disposal and recycling practices in order to protect urban waterways and reduce health hazards. She's co-founder of the Boone Street Farm over in East Baltimore. We're in East Baltimore. And Cheryl, welcome. Good to have you here.
Great. Thank you.
So 410-319-8888 is this number. Join us here as you hear the conversation unfold. Let's just start. I mean, talk a bit about your programs. I want to just, in your own words, rather than these words that describe them, I want you to kind of give us the heart and soul of where you are. Pasha, can we start with yours?
Sure. Our program is, again, Imagine Me Ministries. Imagine Me is held at Calverton, Friendship Preparatory Academy at Calverton. We operate every Tuesday and Thursday. Each of the young ladies in our program receives a one-on-one mentor. One of the things that we address for the females and girls is for them to see themselves the way God sees them. And so our focus is on healthy self-esteem, financial literacy, and numerous things. We have women who come in and minister to the young ladies. We have males who come in and provide a positive role model. Our project through the Open Society Institute is an Imagine Me book project. And so what our girls will be doing is creating a book. And this book is going to share their story. It can be, each young lady will have her own chapter in this book, and it will be something that they will use their entrepreneurial skills, reading, writing, things that will help them, and skills that will transfer into positive life skills as they progress from middle school into high school.
Harold, yes. Bailey, talk a bit about you. We met last weekend at the Restorative Justice meeting was taking place here at Morgan State University's campus.
So
let me get the mic a little closer to you so make sure your voice gets right out there.
Thank you. My program is entitled the Reentry Employment and Economic Empowerment Program. I'll be partnering with Turk House Recovery Centers. They have three facilities in Baltimore City and one in Howard County. I provide employment readiness preparation for those individuals, and the goal of the program is to increase black male achievement, both academic and employment outcomes citywide.
So so what drove you to this? I mean, I see in the kind of finding out who you were, you spent 20 years inside.
Yes, 19 years, 10 months, which I round up to 20 years.
That's 20 years.
But incredibly, I share with individuals that Nelson Mandela's life, he spent 27 and a half years in prison and came out unbound and unbroken, and I think everybody's familiar that he went from prisoner to president. He is an inspiration to me as well as many other individuals. While I was incarcerated, I read voraciously. I was blessed to have learned how to read when I was young, and while I was incarcerated, I read to learn. And I have a moral incentive to give back to individuals that are in so-called marginalized populations, people that are vulnerable. I have been trained as a vocational rehabilitation counselor. I have a master's degree in education, but I have a healthy respect for individuals with mental and or physical disabilities for them to live independently and also to become employed. But I've applied that education to the field of reentry because I've lived it. I've been impacted by incarceration. What I've been able to achieve with educational achievements and employment, I believe is not that unusual, that many other individuals could do the same thing.
I agree. Cheryl Carmona.
Hi. So I work at Boone Street Farm, and it started about 2 years ago. And the initiative started as a project to grow healthy food in the East Baltimore Midway neighborhood. And this OSI fellowship allowed us to address some of the challenges we had in the first 2 years, just keeping up the appearance and the look of our site. We spent a lot of time growing food and have been really engaging with the neighborhood through the project, both the youth and the adults. We started a community garden, and the kids really got involved in the farm project. But one of the major challenges we had was the appearance of our site was impacted by the community surrounding us. So in the alleys and at the back of our lot, we would often have a lot of dumping issues or trash blowing in from the alleys around our lot. And farming really requires inputs, such as fertilizers, and that's something I have a background. I studied in an environmental science program looking at issues around agriculture, environmental issues in agriculture with the use of fertilizers. So we've been creating our own fertilizer at the farm with a worm composting system and also just composting the waste at the farm. And we wanted to start this program that would not only educate the neighborhood and look at the basic issues that we're having, where people aren't using trash cans necessarily, or that we having issues with people just straight up dumping in the neighborhood and on our lots, but we also wanted to incorporate recycling and get people involved in a program where they can bring us their food waste. Recycle their food waste into a fertilizer that will support the farm and the community garden. And we want to get people on board with using the proper waste disposal mechanisms that exist in the city, but also to really reduce their trash loads by educating and getting people into recycling and finding creative ways to recycle other things besides just food waste. So we also will bring on board newspaper, cardboard inputs from the neighborhood, and including food waste.
Bashi Rose.
Yeah, again, the name of my program is DRAMA. It's an acronym for Direct Responses Alleviate Misdirected Aggression. And that's actually an acronym that the men that I started working with back in 2007 at the Maryland Correctional Training Center in Hagerstown came up with. I'm partnering with American Friends Service Committee, AFSC, and I started out in the prison participating with the Friend of a Friend mentoring program back in 2007, and the men expressed an interest in doing theater. So from that point, they came up with the acronym and started doing drama every two Tuesdays a month, and they've been doing it ever since. And OSI is allowing me to expand that program into hopefully five prisons, and also into Baltimore City high schools. And not only will we be incorporating drama, we'll be using film as well to, you know, use it as a tool for conflict resolution and self-expression.
So I mean, I know that OSI gives these grants, these fellowships out. Hopefully people kind of jumpstart themselves and create something that continues beyond the 18-month fellowship. I'm curious, though, because there are a lot of bright young minds who end up with these fellowships, and we're doing some significant work. and are committed to social change in people's lives in this community. And this city is always wrestling with what to do and how you kind of transform a community. And I want our listeners to join us here also at 410-319-8888 or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com with your thoughts and ideas as you hear this conversation unfold. So how do you take the kind of things you're thinking about in terms of a much larger scale? I mean, it's important, I think, to do things at community level and get things rolling in a middle school, in a East Baltimore Community Garden, you know, with men coming out, with working in certain institutions with X number of men and young people in high schools. But, you know, for a massive kind of change to happen, to really affect the people's lives in this community, think about the work you're doing. I'm curious what you think would be the kind of key starting points to really turn this city around. You know, and we just one last thing. You know, when we think about turning the city around, we look at all the kind of work in the Inner Harbor, and we look at that kind of development work is turning the city around. But what that also leaves out are the majority of people in the city who are just working class people, poor people who are working to make things work right. You know, I helped run Billy Murphy's mayoral campaign back in 1983. We lost badly, but one of the campaign slogans was we were talking about the Inner Harbor, not the Outer Harbor. So I'm just curious where you all think we need to start. What has to happen to...
Well, for the work that I do with formerly incarcerated populations, I strive to inform them about the employer expectations to arrive early, not just on time, to have a good attitude and demeanor. And it's not that difficult, incredibly, to obtain employment. It's a tough economy now. But retaining employment is something that individuals need to know about to keep the job. Also, what I intend to do with this program is replicability. I want to train trainers, other formerly incarcerated people, to encourage them to achieve education, higher education, because education can provide individuals two things, respectability and quite a bit of earning potential. So depending on how much respectability they want from their family, from their neighborhood, the outer community, international respect is achievable. And how much they want to maintain or increase their lifestyle, that's how much education they should pursue. Additionally, I encourage individuals that if they decide to do the work that I do, it's quite unusual that individuals transition out of confinement and are able to use that experience in the work that they are doing. And I'm blessed to be able to enjoy the work that I'm doing to educate others. But what I want to do is train trainers so that they can have a geometric impact, not just me touching one, two, three people to improve their lives and their families' lives, but trainers that will help train other formerly incarcerated people so the impact is geometric, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, and so forth.
So taking what you just said, I'm thinking, please chime in here. I mean, one of the things that you know, we have a huge population in Baltimore of people who experience prison. Mm-hmm. So there's one in terms of turning people around, help people turn themselves around who come out of prison, but the other are kind of the impediments in people's way who are in prison, the limitations when they come out, limitations to what they're allowed to do.
Barriers to employment and also...
Right, lots of them.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the whole notion of prison, I mean, just locking someone away, you know, just simply with the only intention of punishing them. But what about nurturing these individuals, you know what I'm saying, to become, because eventually many of them are going to be coming back to the communities that they come from. So what about, you know, focusing more on mentoring some of the younger men who are in there, you know, giving them opportunities, giving them opportunity to, you know, to have a different world view, to have a sense of humanity, a sense of expression. And that's, you know, that's part of what drives me to do what I do, to work with these men, because over the years, since 2007, I've seen the profound effect it has when you have men of various ages and experiences in one room, you know, sharing with one another and breaking down barriers and stereotypes they may have with one another and sharing and expressing their worldviews and their ideas. And some of the men I work with now who are on the outside, they devote a lot of their time to giving back, you know, to mentoring other young men who could potentially end up having the experiences that they've had. So I think if something like that occurs on a regular basis, I think we can make a huge impact.
Go ahead, Basha.
I heard hope, I heard nurture, and I firmly believe, you know, as a Christian, it comes down to what you believe and who you believe in. And as a Christian, having a faith in Jesus Christ, it is a huge ordeal to try to change the mindset of people. And so whether you are incarcerated and you're behind jail walls, or you're incarcerated in your mind and you're on in a inner city community, it is we need people who are committed to their communities. And I think that in order to do that, there has to be people who have a certain level of love that will be committed to the young people, and there needs to be a decrease in ignorance. A lot of times I believe that those of us in certain communities don't know what resources are available, whether it's healthcare, whether it's what jobs are available, whether it is education opportunities. I think that in order to do that, you have to change the mindset, and that will foster a pride in oneself, a pride in one's community, so that you won't put trash out because it's your community. I know of I can think of situations where we would be in one community and this community may be clean and pristine and nobody will put a drop of trash in that area. But then they'll go to their neighborhood and they'll throw trash. Why? Because there needs to be a certain level of pride in your community and in yourself. And I believe without the proper mindset, it can't happen.
So let me ask, go ahead. You're gonna say, and, no, and I'll ask a question.
Yeah, and I think from our perspective, working with the youth has been so encouraging and so inspiring in the neighborhood, and getting them involved and engaged in the activities outdoors, after school, working in the garden. We've seen them learn so much and really prosper and grow in front of us at the garden. And so for us, one of the things that we want to continue to work on is to build a program for the youth to be able to come and work with us after school. It's going to start at first with like the local elementary school. They want to have a garden club, and we'll come and we'll have them come to the garden, and we'll be working with them. And I think it's really important to make sure that they're on top of these environmental issues, and they know, because they can bring these ideas back home with them and work on educating their parents in some ways, because it is very difficult, like Pasha said, to change the mindset of folks who have already been working in and living in these neighborhoods. And it's we know that we're up against a challenge to try to get even just these small changes with trash and recycling behaviors. And then in another point, you were asking kind of how this could be expanded across the city. We're working on this program with our community association. Mm-hmm. So this essentially will be something that every community association across the city would be able to replicate.
You about to say something, Bosch?
Well, I would like to,
if I may,
in reference to your point about barriers to successful prisoner reentry, from my own experience and observation, it's twofold. One is within the individual, their psychological adjustment and emotional adjustment after confinement when they transition out, but also the social consequences of conviction, collateral consequences they're referred to as. And what my work focuses on is waking up individuals to their own humanity and their own self-worth, and exposing them to the resources that are available.
So, I mean, one of the things I just push a bit on what you all were saying. I mean, I think it's incredibly important to kind of work with people to kind of find themselves so they can face what they have to face in the world that we live out here. And I think that's especially important for young people in middle school and getting to talk with young people in our schools and men and women coming out of prison to kind of have a sense of their own power is really very important. But can you put all of it on the doorstep of personal responsibility? You know what I'm saying? Can everything put at that be put at that doorstep? I mean, is it all just about to transform who we are in this culture, transform this city and society? Is it just about personal transformation? Is it about somebody deciding not, you know, to be a different kind of person? Or are there other things that have to change for things to really work as well?
Oh, definitely. I mean, just from, you know, doing the theater with the men, you know, you have different individuals with different perspectives and ideologies, you know what I'm saying? But one common string is that, you know, they all realize that, you know, they're part of the prison industrial complex and that there are, you know, social, economic, you know, political and other influences that, you know, have contributed to their being in prison and have contributed to the large number of men of African descent being in prison. So I think, you know, that kind of consciousness and a desire to change that situation. You know,
and I believe that more important than dealing with the social programs, education and training programs, is that individuals commit to their own desire and commitment to adequately utilize those resources.
I think that it can start with the person, but I also think that it has to include pretty much everyone surrounding. So community organizations, schools, churches, organizations like Open Society Institute, radio stations that will get the word out. There needs to be a group effort, a collaboration of people from different fields of expertise that will come together, which I do believe that Baltimore definitely has that happening. It's just a level of consistency. So even if we get people to come together and we're going to change the mindsets and we're going to do this great work, how long is it going to last? And unfortunately, you know, you have financial resources that come into play when you're trying to do this great work. And so we need people who will do it whether they get paid or not. That's why mentoring and volunteerism is huge in order to affect any change.
And service provision, in my estimation, needs to be integrated and seamless and efficient and effective.
What does that mean?
So, collaborative efforts of like-minded folk that want to humanistic to help other individuals. Yeah, I typically work over 40 hours a week because I'm blessed to enjoy the work that I do. Some individuals are in the reentry field, for example, not because of their humanitarian concern, but maybe they are involved for other reasons.
So I want to come back to that one. Okay, Carla.
Yeah, and I think that, we also are a part of a food system change that really needs to happen in Baltimore City. And, you know, the Urban Farm Alliance exists because people are interested in seeing more local food produced within the city limits. And we're all working together to interact with the current food system and address the issues with the current food system. And so it's not just about getting people as individuals to want to make these changes. It's also about the system around them mm-hmm. that's creating part of these desires.
So we're going to take a short break. I want to try to kind of pull these things together. We've been saying this first half an hour. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Clarence, you're the first caller up. Come to your call when we return. Don't go away as we talk with the Open Society Institute fellows, at least four of them. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're talking to four of the new Open Society Institute fellows this hour. Bashi Rose is back in the house with us. His program, Direct Responses Alleviate Misdirected Aggression, is a program in our prisons and high schools to work with young men around issues of conflict without resorting to violence. We also have Pasha Lee is with us, who is creating this Imagine Me book project from her Imagine Me Ministries at the Friendship Preparatory Academy in Calverton, working with middle school girls, an often neglected group of young people, I think, in this community. We always talk about the boys, forget about these middle school girls all the time. Harold Bailey's with us, who spent 20 years in prison and got his master's degree and his bachelor's degree from Coppin State University. And he's working with Turk Recovery Houses to help prepare men coming out of prison, the formerly incarcerated men to transition into this life, to become successful citizens. Cheryl Carmona is created the Greater Greenmount Trash and Recycling Campaign, to take recycling materials in that community and learn how to work with people and work with the community to make those things into living institutions. That's either Urban Farms. She's co-founder of the Boone Street Farm in East Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts, questions, and ideas are needed and welcome. Clarence in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner. This is more or less a thought that I would like to
inject
into the conversation. It's specifically directed to when they say that they're going to spend $4 billion or $2 billion in the city in the next 10 years, how much of a percentage does anyone think of that money is going to go into changing the financial conditions? You already mentioned changing the mindset of people, but changing the financial conditions of specifically people in this area, in this city, to help them along, you know, because when you improve people's financial conditions, they have a better outlook on their future and their life. Now, we're talking 10 years and $4 billion. A large portion of that money should go into targeting people like your guests are talking about. And I haven't heard anybody mention that.
So I'd just like to throw that in. Clarence, before you hang up, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about.
Well, on the school system. The money that's going to be spent on reconstruction.
Oh, we hope. We don't know if it's going to be that. But one of the issues that we faced yesterday in our Annapolis summit with the governor, the president, and the Senate and Speaker of the House, was that there's a lot of opposition to this leveraging to get $2.4 billion to put people to work in Baltimore. But I hear what you're saying. So let's talk about that. I mean, I think that because part of the problem is that, again, I guess what I was getting at earlier when we talked about personal responsibility and changing one's lives, I was involved in that work for 15 years of my life, and I understand and I believe in it, and you have to do it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Thank you, Clarence. Always good to hear from you.
All right.
To push what Clarence was saying, but the problem is, yeah, people can get jobs, but what do they pay? Mm-hmm. You know, people can get jobs, but what are they? And, you know, you have construction jobs in the city, and most people working those jobs come from someplace. I can't say with verification that most of them, but many of the people in those jobs come from someplace else because many people in our city don't have the skill sets, A, to get the jobs. They don't hire folks coming out of prison for those jobs or people who haven't had work. So, I mean, that's what I mean by something that goes beyond
individual.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's something that has to be, you have to organize and it has to be fought for. I mean, one example is out in Hagerstown. Now when you go down Roxbury Road to your right, it used to be a field of like corn growing.
I remember that field when I worked out there, yes.
Well, now it's a field of solar panels. But the prisoners have nothing to do with the solar panels. The only thing they have to do with it is cutting the grass that grows around the solar panels.
Are they connected to the prisons, the solar panels?
Solar panels are on the ground where the prisons are.
Oh.
So the men aren't...
As an energy source for the prisons.
Right, but the men aren't learning the technology. They have nothing to do with it. So the prison is basically getting a cutback from it, you know, from the power that's being collected from the solar panels, and the inmates aren't benefiting from it at all.
So nobody's learning the maintenance, the cleaning, the construction of...
Not
that's the kind
all.
Of thing we're talking about,
no.
Right?
Yeah, and I believe that also in reference to Clarence's question about the educational system, the population that I assist, 100% formerly incarcerated, and the Turk House does have one house, one facility that is all women, and I gratefully include those women in the employment readiness training because they're the parents and guardians of some African-American male youth. And as those women go with employment and improving their lifestyle, so hopefully will those children go, and the next logical step would be to forestall incarcerations. But about 50% of the prison population does not have a high school diploma, and some of them that do are not functionally literate.
Right.
So it's the parental involvement to take teachers and principals and administrators in the school system to task to make sure that individuals are literate and are worthy of a high school diploma.
Yeah. And also, I mean, the reality is, I mean, if you're really going to educate our young brothers, you know, we're just talking about brothers, right, and sisters as well. It's not just education. It's not just reading. They need mentoring. They need nurturing. They're dealing with a lot of issues at home. You know what I'm saying? You need psychologists in there who really understand where they're coming from, because it's a serious healing process that needs to take place before you can actually sit down in a classroom with them expect them to learn something. Every time I go into the schools, you know, my goal is to do film and theater with the students, but before we can get to that, you know what I'm saying, I have to you know, find out where they're coming from. You know what I'm saying? Making sure they feel comfortable. Find a way for them to express themselves, you know, from where they are. You know, one example, one brother in one of the classes, he told me he knew how to play drums. I asked him to name all the parts of the drums that he could, so I brought in a drum kit. Just him playing the drums in the classroom held their attention, inspired them. We were able to get work done like that. I think, you know, the educational system has to be revamped. It's outdated. It's not working. For the most part, they're not there for the benefit of the children for the most part. And a lot of, you know, potentially good teachers are being burnt out. So, I mean, if we're really serious about, you know, overhauling the educational system here or really educating our children, I mean, you have to be realistic. It has to be totally rehauled. It's not working to our benefit at all.
Go ahead. I'm curious because I'm curious how this translates into, before I turn to the vacant land in Baltimore and how this could transform the city. I want to get Cheryl to jump in on that. Anything you want to jump in as well, Cheryl, just jump in. But I'm curious about the girls you work with.
The young ladies that we work with, one of the things that's very important for them is to have a positive role model. And so one thing that I can say specifically about our mentors, our Imagine Me mentors, is that they are dedicated and they show them what it means to be a woman and can instruct them and show them how a young lady conducts herself. And so I think that when you get to that's kind of outside of the classroom and outside of the school setting. Inside the school setting, there are, I can honestly say, at Friendship, at Calverton, just call it Calverton, the principal, Dr. Green, the vice principals, and a lot of the teachers that have been there for years are not only committed to the young people inside the school, but they're committed to the communities. And so I think that it's important as these charter schools and these community schools are coming up, it needs to be people, key people inside the schools that are committed to the whole girl, the whole boy, not just whether or not they can learn, but okay, you're not learning today. How come you're not learning today? What could possibly be going on at home? And so there needs to be a huge team effort on everyone's part. And everybody has an agenda. Some agendas are positive, some agendas are not so positive. What needs to happen is to really be able to weed out those, and I don't know how that can be done. I mean, we're living in an evil world. But how can change be affected by weeding out who's not genuine and who's not really committed to seeing change come? And I don't have the answer to that. But what I do believe is that if we seek to decrease the level of ignorance on every level, whether it's education, whether it's math, whether it's science, whether it's how you speak, whether it's how you shop for your groceries. You know, in the greater Rosemont community, there really is only one supermarket. So if I don't know how to eat, then that affects how I think. You know, if I can walk past 10 corner stores and get chips and onion pickles and candy, then that's going to impact how I think in school. So it needs to be something that's all-encompassing.
Holistic. Mm-hmm. Jump in, Cheryl.
So I think, you know, a community garden or an urban farm in the city are interacting with the city in the way that they can provide a source of food, one, and be, and that's very much connected to health. And so that's a part of the goal of the project from the beginning was just how can we just grow food that's healthy and that's available because it's right there, right in the center of a neighborhood, and get it out into the neighborhood. And that's I think one of the big benefits of having urban farms and community gardens around is that they're a demonstration of how food grows. And I think that's a really important lesson for both the youth and for anyone who wants to get involved. So I think that's a major benefit of this project and having it there in the middle of the neighborhood. And then I think also I wanted to talk about sort of just the environmental science side of things and how the environmental field, environmental issues are really important and are going to be very important in the near future. And I think incorporating environmental justice and environmental science lessons in agriculture, urban agriculture, or community gardening is really important for the youth to be involved in, because these are definitely jobs that could open up in the future, or there will be jobs related to water quality and food justice in the future. So I think having kids exposed to these ideas and these thoughts and being well-versed in these topics is really important. So I think that is beneficial for
You're talking about, when you sit here talking about personal transformation, all of you just also spoke about social transformation, which is a huge piece of this. It has to go hand in hand. Sometimes when you work with young people or work with people who have struggled through poverty, struggled through prison, that personal transformation leads them to be leading fighters for social transformation. People have been demand that social transformation so they can get the jobs they want, they can have communities that are livable and enjoyable, you know. And let's go back to the phones here and see what listeners are thinking. How has this inspired you, made you think, or what do you think? 410-319-8888. Andre, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How's everybody doing today?
Very well.
Fine,
Mark.
How are you doing?
Now, I just wanted to briefly touch base on the fact that, you know me, I hear, you know, all the ideas that are out there, and they're very good. But the problem I see a lot is parents themselves need to step up and take responsibility not only for their own households, but also for the community that they actually live in. Just for an example, our last mayoral election, you know, the turnout was an absolute abomination. The amount of citizens of Baltimore that actually turned out to elect our mayor, who will be responsible for setting policies for 5, maybe 10 years into the future. But, you know, what, 10%, maybe 12% of the population actually took part of that election itself. So I think the parents not only need to take responsibility for their kids, for their development, also for their education. You know, parents need to sit down with their kids, check their homework, and not only check their homework, but also give them homework to find out what their strengths and weaknesses are also, and then get involved in the schools and hold the educators accountable for the quality of education that's going on in their schools. And then also with the drug abuse and the alcoholism, these things take place in the home. You know, we have strong homes, then we'll have strong communities.
Well, I think that's true. But I just want to jump in here, Pasha. I want you to jump in on what the caller was just saying. But and just to push a tad further, and part of the thing, you know, we had a show here the other week with Corey McRae, who is a young leader of, came out of the corner but decided to make his life better, became an electrician, became a leader in IBEW, the union, organized a young trade unionist group, his own Democratic Party Club and the rest. He's really an interesting young guy. One of the things he's leading right now is a campaign to raise the minimum wage. One of his arguments is, I was thinking about Andre was just saying, is that a lot of the parents we're talking about who care and love their children. I mean, we have this image that all, you know, inner city parents or working class parents are, you know, either the junkies or alcoholics. They don't care about their children.
That's not true.
And that's not true.
Right.
But they're working two or three jobs just to make ends meet.
Exactly.
And they can't even, and he said, if you had the people were paid a decent wage, they could work 9 to 5 and be home with their children. And that's what I'm talking about. You can transform people, partially, but it's also a social, a political transformation that has to take place for this really thing, this whole thing to change.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And Andre, I completely agree with him. It sounds wonderful to say they need to come home, they need to sit with their kids, they need to have their kids do their homework. But if they're not making enough money, like you said, to work one job, that it's an impossibility. And so it's an impossibility to stay on, and especially if they have multiple children. And that's why there needs to be wraparound services that wrap around the parent, And resources need to be made available, especially with our young men, as it relates to male mentors. My husband, Minister Wayne Lee, goes into the youth prisons, and there is a certain level of ignorance, and it's just because they don't see different. And so there needs to be support for the parents. There needs to be support for the single mothers. There needs to be support for the single fathers. There needs to be support for those who are working. And I'm so glad you said that all inner city parents are not strung out on drugs. All inner city parents
right.
are not neglecting their children. No, that's not true. You know, they need support. We need to go back to the village. We need to go back to the way communities used to be, when if I saw your child or somebody saw me doing something wrong, I would get in trouble. And so it needs to be more of a community across the city.
And I'd like to add to Andre's comment about the lack of voting. In Maryland, individuals that have been formerly incarcerated, dependent on how many convictions they have had, do regain their right to vote. Now, to educate this block of individuals, and I'd like to cite some statistics that drive my work. And this is data from fiscal year 2010, the Maryland Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services Division of Correction annual report. Page 51 of that report cites the releases in Maryland. Every month, 1,160 individuals are released from Maryland State prisons. That is separate and apart from pretrial and detention services, the old Baltimore City Jail. The total releases annually, each year from this 2010 report, 13,914 people. Page 53 of that report talks about it cites the jurisdictions from which committed persons were intaken, mm-hmm. and the assumption is that they go back to those exact locales. Baltimore City, 4,653 people in the year 2010. That's 55.1% of individuals were arrested from Baltimore City. Baltimore County, 858 people, or 10.2%. That's 65.3% from Baltimore City and Baltimore County. And the last statistic I'd like to cite, page 55 of that report, the race and sex of committed persons. In the year 2010, black males, there were 6,225 out of 8,440 in Maryland State prisons. That is 73.8% of the Maryland prison population in 2010. 73.8% African-American males, and you don't have to be a statistician to know something is askew. We represent about 16% of the Maryland State population.
Something is askew, put it lightly.
I think that may be part of the reason why some people don't vote. They don't feel like, you know, regardless of who the mayor is, you know, people still going to be incarcerated, people still employed. So, I mean, I think, you know, you have to deal realistically where people are. You can't expect, you know, a person to be really pressed about voting if they can't keep the lights on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They're not, you know,
right.
able to keep food going consistently. You know, the children are being supervised, or the children in and out of trouble. I mean, voting, you know, I think it has its practical uses, but just have to be realistic about people being inspired to vote.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think that, let's go back to Fonja. I think that this is, I mean, there's some of the issues that are important, I think, for us to wrestle with, because we can bring lots of people into, we can bring lots of people and then change their lives, work with lots of people, change their lives, whether they've been incarcerated, young girls trying to, because they're trying to kind of help them find their way through this very tough year of being in middle school, where so many of them are kind of pushed into this sexual object
yes.
world.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Yes, they are. And, you know, so, and that's a real issue. But then you have to have something out here for people to go into mm-hmm. once they've begun to change, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Curtis in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Greetings. I just want to say you all made some very good points. You know, throughout the time I've been listening, I kind of hopped in late maybe for like the last 30 minutes. But, you know, so much of the stuff that we're seeing, that we're talking about, is actually, it's some of it, whether people believe it or not, is systemic and it's by design. And just how the brother was, you know, he was quoting statistics. If we go back a couple of generations and look at statistics, even dealing with the prison system, to help, you know, affirm what I'm saying, a lot of this stuff, especially with black males and being incarcerated, a lot of this stuff didn't start happening on this scale until integration. You know, people would operate a lot different when that accountability in the community and socially, you know, amongst people who were, and, you know, as the sister said earlier about like minds, like consciousness, moving in the same direction. There was a certain focus two or three generations ago, even, and yes, they overlooked some things, and that's some of the things that even the elders, when he was talking about mentoring earlier, some of them don't have the, I'll say, the gonads to actually look some of the younger brothers in the face and say, you know what, we made some of the wrong decisions. We fought some of the wrong battles. Maybe we could have did this different or did that different. Most of the time I hear more addressing of the symptoms than going to the root causes. You know what I'm saying? I think homeschooling and sacrificing is going to have to come back around on a certain level, if you really, because a lot of this behavior, people are socialized into this through the television, through the music. You know, you're constantly feeding yourself, not just physically, but mentally. And parents can't monitor their children. You know, when I hear people say, you know, these parents could be better parents, all of them crackheads and this and that and the other. I know parents that, without a doubt, are working 2-3 jobs, not just one parent, sometimes 2 parents,
right,
to sustain a house. And, I mean, some of these comments that people make, not y'all, you know, listening to the show.
So we only have a little bit of time left, because I'd like to get our guests to come back in and comment about what you were saying. You want to pick up? I mean, one of the issues, I think, when you were talking about Curtis was, I mean, I don't know if we're going to get to a place where people should be homeschooled. Because it's harder to homeschool somebody, especially if you're working 2 or 3 jobs. But
yeah, you got to be in the kind of financially cush situation to do homeschooling or a lot of different resources.
But more parents, mm-hmm, could be involved in their schooling of their children.
Oh, I definitely agree. As long as we keep in mind the social and economic realities of the people, you know, whose children are going to school.
But the school should not be the only agent of social control either. The family needs to, you know,
yeah, I think it's all part of the same thing. It goes back to Carter G. Woodson, Miseducation of the Negro. You know what I'm saying? Education is not just the schools. The school, community, all together. It's a holistic process.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we tend to separate it. You know what I'm saying? But it's all together.
So I'm curious. I'm going to come, Cheryl, just for a moment. I just want to throw something back out at you. I mean, I'm curious how you think, what is the transformative possibility of what we call urban agriculture on Baltimore, on people who live in it, on people who work it, on our communities?
Well, so currently we probably have about 10 or so urban farms that exist in Baltimore City. And there's the Farm Alliance of Baltimore City that just started in the past year to help farmers who are interested in working in the city have access to resources and shared resources so that we can continue to take up the vacant land that does exist often in a lot of neighborhoods within the city, and actually continue to grow food and produce food within the city. I think that it's tricky, because I do come from the background of looking at agriculture across the country and the amount of land that we use in the country to grow our food. And when you think about it that way, it is a very small portion of land that exists within the city to grow food. And if you were really trying to think about growing everything, that can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But we could grow a lot of vegetables in the city. A lot of the land that we use up in the country to grow our food is to grow food for animals and to pasture land for animals. And so growing lots of the proteins that we would need and producing milk and those kinds of agricultural products would not be possible within the city necessarily, but we could grow a lot of vegetables, and that's something that we need to inject more into our diets for a healthier food system. So I think that's the direction that the city is trying to take. They do have a program where they're trying to get some of this vacant land into production. And I think that's a real possibility for some jobs. I think, you know, that's still something that's out to to call is whether or not these can provide sustainable jobs, because growing food on such a small on small lots can it takes a lot of energy, and it and sometimes you don't you're not growing on the same scale that farmers are outside of the city, so it can take a little more energy to produce a smaller amount of food. But I think you know, the Farm Alliance is working on trying to make it possible so that that this could be a thing that can exist in the city, and we could grow a lot more vegetables.
Well, I want to say thank all of you for being with us. This has been great, and it's good to meet you all, the ones I have not met yet before.
Thank you
for having me.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Pashley, good to meet you, Pashley.
Nice to meet you.
Sir Komona, Harold Bailey, my old friend Bashi Rose. Great to have you all in the studio.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
On our way out of here, as we talk about the Open Society Institute Fellows, at least four of this year's class, I remind you the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We'll be right back, and another episode of Soundbites talking about our food. Stay with us.